Welcome to the Technoid Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining me on today's show, Raghu Patini. He is the CEO of eGen Solutions. He doesn't name drop. I'm not going to name drop, but I'm just going to tell you that there's a bunch of companies in Chicago that are in that unicorn space, and they are helping those companies with technology in a big, big way. I really do think that as the market continues to shift, the talent, cost of talent, not everywhere, but even Chicago, which right now ranks among the top as far as low cost of real estate and talent, is going to continue to go up. And as the recession does eventually come, less money will be flooding into startups by investing. And there is going to be an arms race. And there already is an arms race, but there's going to be an even bigger one. And the augmented staff, augmented offshore staff, tech services business is going to go through the roof. And the biggest problem why it hasn't worked in the past is that they haven't been built to serve growth companies, which is the predominant company of the future, is a tech growth company. And I think this is one of the companies that's absolutely built to help companies that are scaling quickly. So we go into all of the kind of the pain points that technical and non-technical founders and big tech teams have when building tech. When is the right time to build tech? When is the wrong time to build tech? Lots of great takeaways from this, especially around the idea of culture mapping and being able to find the right people to bring in your company that may belong to somebody else's company like eGen or us in that matter. And one of the things that I think is interesting about today's interview, as well as many of the previous interviews that are going to come out this week, is this conversation around hiring the right people. Whether you're hiring it for your company, or Raghu's hiring it for his company to work for your company or for his company, or you're looking at the interview I did with Raul from Superhuman, we have gotten into a position, and I understand why, because you're trying to fill seats, you're trying to hire and recruit talent. We make concessions as founders and CEOs. We hire people that we need in the moment, and we make concessions that erode away the fabric of the business. They erode away the scalability because we have a bad infrastructure. You've got to hire the right people, and you've got to make sure that you're not making concessions. Those people need to be in love with the product that you're and they are building. They need to believe in the core value that the company stands for, whether that's Superhuman and creating delightful experiences, or it's Raghu's company, eGen, working for everybody else's company to build product that changes the way people live, that is makes a healthier living, that saves lives in some cases. Or it could just be a tchotchke app. But you better love the tchotchke app that you're building, because if you don't, you're going to see it in the user experience. And one of the lines that I will leave you with in this conversation was that at his company, one of the core values that they have, and it's a great one, is to lead with user experience and then build to need. Not just building something, but building something that could be custom, it could be buy, it could be bought, it could be, you know, whatever, could be API, it could be any hash of things, is not as important to you as it is to the customer and the experience that they're going to get. And there's a lot to be learned around that conversation, so I look forward to that. Before we do that, we've got to check in with the Technori poll, which is on the True Public app. You can check that out. Just download the True Public app, and I'll read it for you now. Of course, I have to mention that poll is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. See why 65,000 businesses use ActiveCampaign for their marketing by signing up to ActiveCampaign.com/Technori. First 2 months are for free. Don't be a fool. You should actually use it. Here's the deal. It's a funny question. Which is your favorite social media platform to flirt on? I'm an idiot. So, one, I don't flirt on any of them because I'm married. So, my flirting is with my wife. And I'm a fool and flirt on iMessage. 10% of the many thousands of respondents picked iMessage. 58% Snapchat, 26% Instagram, 6% Facebook. Back in the day when Facebook was legit, it was all Facebook, which was a terrible idea because it was everywhere and the data was leaked everywhere. By the way, if it's on Instagram, it's on Facebook, which is the same problem. So maybe people figure that out. Snapchat, I mean, it was built for that, right? Like the whole point of Snapchat was to do that. I'm just late to the party. I didn't get on Snapchat really until after I met my wife, so I didn't do any flirting. My only flirting takes place when I flirt, I love you, and I put that on iMessage, and it's there for the world to see, I guess. I think it's interesting. Also, one little tidbit. It is the exact same 59% male to female on Snapchat. The numbers across the board are almost identical, which I guess the only reason I say that, I think it's funny, is because if it was really one-sided, one could assume that one gender is flirting with other people on that one platform and it's not being responded or reciprocated, which I think is kind of a funny thing. The idea that everyone is fairly equal, does at least suggest that the flirting is reciprocated, which is good. That's a good thing. Okay. Now we're going to kick it over to my interview, which, again, I think is a notable one for those of you who are building tech right now. Raghu Patini, CEO of eGen Solutions. There's probably no better place to start the conversation with you than the point of contact, which is my friend Robbie Abed.
You're right.
Robbie's been a huge part of Technori and still very active in the startup community. And he's the kind of person that connects founders like yourself with people like me and other founders. And I think it's interesting, as a point of entrance here for you, what is it about the Chicago tech community in general that you felt like you could be a key player and you could help them out?
A couple of things. One, we have been working with both enterprise customers and some of the unicorns and startups. So the large enterprise customers, they bring the process and maturity, and the startups and unicorns, they bring a lot of agility, speed. So how do you bring both in a combination and trying to really help the tech community? I mean, with entrepreneur, first time he's building, first time a product, and he doesn't need to go through all these mistakes and learnings. I mean, I think we have crossed, I mean, because some of the products, that projects that we worked on, and we have learned all those mistakes. What are some of the mistakes that they can go through in terms of architectural, product, market fit, a lot of stuff. I mean, we have ourselves had a first-hand experience that the first-time entrepreneur tech community, they don't need to go through that challenge again. Because currently, a couple of startups that are working in Chicago, they have used some offshore firm to do their first product. I mean, the architecture, the code quality, a lot of stuff. And they brought us in, and we are trying to save their time, money, so that they can really make wise decisions to get the product off the ground.
I talked to, whether it's our own business or you or others, in particular, it's not, we're going to obviously stay close to the tech development space because of the business, but it's also in sales. It's also in just operations and a CFO, things like that, that we talk a lot about with founders, what I call gray matter, that you can go find tech anywhere. You can go to literally any place on earth and find people sitting in a room developing and creating. Now, whether the quality is there is a different thing. You could argue a lot of times the offshore quality is very poor. One, because it might be cheaper, it might be, you know, whatever, the quality and retention of the people working there. But a lot of times it's your fact that you don't understand what you're building fully. You understand what you want to build, but you don't actually know what you're building. And so you lack the gray matter, you lack the understanding, the experience, and the know-how, and the connections, and the network to process what you need, scope it out properly, and put a real tangible deliverable to your partner to build, and then get it back and know that it was your vision. There's no business logic. And that's the part that companies like yours, I think, serve a huge, you can serve any company, but it's the tech growth companies, I think, in particular, because they have enough know-how to get off the ground to raise money on the principle of what their idea is, but they don't know necessarily how to scale that.
You bet.
So from your standpoint, you know, tell me a little bit more about the actual business and how a company engages with you. How does, if I have a new startup company, and I'm going to guess that I probably was a little bit, how do I want to use the word? There's a combination of ballsy and stupid that makes me build this thing on my own without asking for help. And then I come to you and go, I'm in trouble. How do you help me?
It's a good question, Scott. Let me step back and answer that question in a couple of ways. One, some of the entrepreneurs, the first time they never really had any tech background. Now they're working in a bank or some insurance company. They have this idea. I mean, they've been in that industry for long enough. They have got a new idea and they want to launch. They want to be next Uber. They want to be next Airbnb. And they have this big vision. They come to us. And then technology comes way later. First, we'll really help them to define the problem clearly and understand the problem and where, like build versus buy. That's another big decision that we help them to make. And what does it take to really take this product to the market? How fast we can take it to the market? And because when we work some of these large enterprise customers, everything is build, because they don't want to just use any off-shelf. And for them, they have all the money, they have all the muscle to really take a time to build it. But entrepreneurs, 90 days, I mean, they have to test the product. And in that sense, a lot of these trade-off decisions, it's very, very important for them to make it in the right context. And that's where we'll really bring, help them, because we have customers and products that we have seen. Same product, I mean, with three people team, we can build it in 90 days. or it take 15 teams and do in 3 years.
Yeah,
it's a choice. I mean, what's the scale? What is the what is the objective that you want to accomplish in short term?
I think you raise a really interesting point in the when you said the word trade off. I think there's two tracks I want to go into with you. The first one is, well, I guess the let's start with defining it. The first one is when you are a small team, and by small team, it could still be a 100-person company, but the actual product team might only be 5 or 6 or 7 folks. And when they have to do things that are not in their primary competency, you get shortcuts and shortcomings and bridges and things that are really expensive and time-consuming to fix. And it's because they're scrambling around and they have to make decisions. Do we want to, we have a release date, which that's a whole nother conversation, why they choose release dates that are ridiculous before they start. That's a whole nother, they don't even scope it out. Like, how far are you along? 20%. When are we going to define the day of release? Why would you even have, whatever. Anyway, that's another conversation. The founders and the core team are making choices that they want to have either design elements, or they want to have data elements or integration, or it's their, you know, whatever API, any things that they're trying to build. They're having to choose, because they're small, to focus on one or to spread themselves super thin, which when you have a bug or an issue, all of a sudden it just stops dead in its tracks. That's the first part. So how do we actually help augment those teams to provide them with the ability to not ever have to take your core team away from their core competency? That's the first part.
It's a good question, sir. Some of these entrepreneurs, when first time they're launching, building a first tech product company, they have to do everything themselves.
Yep.
They have the habit of, you know what, I don't want to bring any partner. I don't want to bring any outside help. Let me do it myself.
What do you say to them, just as a side? When somebody says that to you, is it sort of like, I can try to convince you otherwise, but in reality, you're just going to have to do this yourself and fail and then call me?
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, sometimes you can go, you can do it. I'm not saying you cannot do it. You can do it. It's all about the time frame. I mean, just working with the right partner that you can shrink the time frame. You figuring it out, are you doing it yourself? If you have the right partner, you have traveled the path in the past, and they can really reduce the time. And that's why it's so critical. I mean, that when entrepreneurs, first-time entrepreneurs, tech entrepreneurs, they have to figure it out many things: product market fit, salespeople, revenue models, and technology, talent. I mean, there is 10 things they have to figure it out. They don't have a leadership team at.
Yep.
In that scenario, I mean, at least counting on one or two key partners. At least that's what I promise to some of the tech entrepreneurs, that I say, you know what, you figure it out, the sales revenue model side of it, and in terms of the technology product, I mean, we have done it, and if we've scaled, I mean, some of our products are scaled globally, and we have that competency. Just leave it to us, and I can confidently, we can deliver you, and we have all the case studies and all the stuff.
So we talked about the negative side of the trade-off. The positive side of the trade-off that I think a lot of entrepreneurs and founders, and not just founders, these are big companies as well, that they don't realize is that by trading off one thing, they are not realizing the potential that you've mentioned a couple times here, which is speed. You are deciding to do this over 12, however long you want, with your 15 teams for 12 years, however long it is. The ability to create something really, really fast and iterate and reiterate and reiterate is actually the better way to get product market fit, not slowly testing little micro things inside of it. And so by trading off and saying, all right, we're going to give up a little bit of the product ownership here, and I don't mean in the actual equity sense, but product ownership, and that you're responsible for portions of this, you are unloading a burden, but you are also enabling yourself to step back and look at it and actually test little parts of this as it's being done. So in other words, you don't have to stop and go back. You can have a team working on one thing and then go back and have testers and QA on it and make sure it's clean, and then go to the next. And it keeps the motion of the company growing, which I think is the big differentiator for the companies that I know, some of which you've worked with and you can name if you want or not. But a lot of the companies that you've worked with are very, very successful, A, because they've partnered with you and enabled themselves to have that flexibility, but also because when you're a growth company, you're scaling. And I'm forgetting who this, I think it was Victor Cerdelli from a Guaranteed Rate who was on the show and said, the key to success for him is that you're building tech that your team can keep up, or is actually ahead of demand. You're able to build things before they even reach to want it. The ability to be building in perpetuity, as opposed to build, stop, look, wait, go back, do again. That flexibility, that trade up, is, I think, one of the key differentiators between those that make it and those that don't.
Yes, I mean, one of the things that, I mean, in any of these technology entrepreneurship, one thing that we do get, we always maintain one R&D team, a small R&D team. We always, I mean, try to, if there is Amazon, AWS, or Azure, I mean, launch a new service. And we are the first people to jump on in less than 24 hours and see what is the services available, what does it mean for our current customers, I mean, if how this is going to really speed up, I mean, some of the development effort. I mean, so having that, small startup company cannot afford to have a dedicated R&D team and testing it out and figuring it out. Some of these, I mean, every day, I mean, God knows how many new services are launching by Amazon, AWS. No one can keep up that stuff.
Yep.
Someone has to really figure it out and understanding what does it mean for, in their specific context. That is one thing. And second thing, one other thing that we found out was in the initial building a product, I mean, you go A to Z one iteration fast.
Yeah.
Don't go, I mean, you just stuck on at a B level and just spend 3 months and you still have to go through, I mean, the beginning, middle, and just do one iteration. It's maybe crappy iteration. Just go with one iteration as fast as you can. So you understand the complexity, you understand all the nuisances in the early on. Then where are the friction points so that you can really spend a lot more time on those areas? And I've seen some of the product companies and technology entrepreneurs. They know they have this big vision and they're only stuck at the A point. They don't even know what is a C brings the complexity, where is a Z brings the clarity. So our experience was, I mean, I always tell our engineers and product teams, go the entire vision, one iteration, end to end. Very basic, but go fast, one iteration quickly.
What is the type of company that you enjoy the most working with? Or like, who do you guys work with from a company size standpoint? And then which one of those do you feel like, this is my... Not only is that our sweet spot as a company, but like, I love this.
I mean,
or do you love all your children the same?
Good question. Some of our customers, I mean, confidentially, we cannot talk about some of the work that we do. And some of our customers, they're really saving people lives. And some of the work, I mean, every sprint, every demo we go, you know what, because of this, I mean, okay, hey, bringing these reports in a timely manner, hey, this is going to really make the doctor more efficient. If you bring the right data, right time with the right information to the doctors, I mean, that is going to really make or break lives. Some of the products that we build is like, end of the day, what's the difference it is making? I mean, some of our products are really saving people's lives. I mean, those things are really, really, I mean, that's really passionate work.
I have to imagine it's not terribly difficult to recruit for people to work on stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's probably pretty simple.
Yeah. At least retaining some good talent on those products are much higher.
Well, I think and that's a key word here is retention. I mean, a lot of the reasons that you find problems with, and I'm going to say, I'm saying offshore, but I really just mean outsource. Most of outsource models, and I'm again speaking only for growth companies because I know the space the best, fail because of sort of what I call three major things. The business logic. You're trying to build something that hasn't been built. Most consultancies are working with companies that are building on a known. The second one, I think, ultimately comes down to what you just talked about, which is retention. You're working with teams that are flipping people in and out so rapidly that they have no ability to actually have consistency in, which is where the spaghetti code term comes from. And then the third one, which might be as important as all of them or less, I'm not sure, is sort of this domain knowledge stakeholdership, which is different from business logic in the sense that, like, yes, I worked in the healthcare industry, so I therefore know the problem, roughly speaking, you're trying to solve. The domain knowledge is I'm building an app that does this and this, which do not exist. And you have to understand when you're working on this, the logic, yes, of the business, like what needs to be done to be in healthcare, what is the FINRA, you know, what are all the things you need to know. But I need to know from an operational, from an, what's the best word about this? Intuitive. I need to know from an intuitive standpoint, what would be the right way that this should be built in order to continue to build on it, because I know where it's going. And when you go outsourcing, you usually lose that. And if you've got the ability to have great clients, which you clearly do, and you have the ability to retain those people to work on multiple projects, you're able to provide them far more consistency and leverage the gray matter from all the previous experiences, which puts you at the top of the at the top of the heap when it comes to tech partnerships.
It's a very good point. I mean, it starts with hiring the right people, Scott. I mean, one of the things that we look for was an engineer. Can he really look at two levels up, three levels up?
Yeah.
And we have...
That's a tough find, by the way.
Yeah. So some of the things that we found, I mean, brilliant technologists. and they only focus on their task. I mean, they don't know how the task is really connected to the overall game. And some of engineers, I mean, they can really see the whole picture. And it's the same thing when two people walking on the street, I mean, one person asks, okay, what are you building? Okay, I'm laying the wall. The other person say, I'm building cathedral. So I think that's the analogy. We see it all the time in the technology, in the product and engineering space many, many times. And one of our main challenge was when we hire, people are brilliant problem solving and they really, I mean, high quality code, and they miss this part. They only focus on that. I mean, they don't really see the overall context, where it's going, how it's going to really make a difference overall product level. And it starts with there. I mean, having that line of sight, even ability to imagine, okay, where I am and about two levels up. I think that's something high potentials early on we detect and trying to create an opportunity for them to grow within the teams and within the projects.
So I think you've clearly defined the importance and the investment you've made to build a great infrastructure, which is what you're essentially selling. You have a supply chain to tech, but like in reality, we've got an infrastructure that is something that you get to lean on as a customer. Walk me through real quick here the actual business. So like if I'm now going to hire you, what does it look like to work with you?
So we have three different type of customers come to us. One is like an entrepreneur who's just working some bank or insurance company. He has this idea.
They're always coming from banks,
yeah,
by the way.
So So they wanted this idea and how do... Okay, we help them, I mean, from all... Okay, we have a product team who can really strategize the product and see the competitors' analysis and all those stuff. And then we have UX team really designing and then dev team. That's the whole, I mean, end-to-end. Some customers, they have a legacy, I mean, on-prem software and they want really modernizing, putting together... latest architectures and tools, and we really transform their business putting that stuff. We have some customers in Chicago with that. A third one was like they're already product market fit, they're in the scale. I mean, they need a lot more helping hands to get some of the work done. And so we have three different type of customers who are currently helping. Some people come just end-to-end product help. Some people come just an advisory. Some comes just, we are already scaling up. I mean, we have these many customers coming up. I mean, the next 1 year, we need a little bit more engineers and more architects to be on the ground and just get the stuff done.
What do you say to the companies, which I'm sure you see run into this as well, who are at the stage where they're not quite to the J curve, where they're really growing and they're hiring a bunch, which I think that it's kind of funny to me with the founders that you can fill the room with developers to keep them growing and they can still hire and replace or hire your people or whatever they want to do. And for some reason, some founders look at it like, I want to hire physically. I personally want to hire these first 50 people. I don't want to bring in outside help. How are those people that you try to convince? Is there no point in convincing? Is it somebody you say, for where you are right now, you just haven't either experienced the pain where you need us or you're just not right yet? Like, call us back. Like, how do you handle talking to entrepreneurs and growth founders, growth company leaders in particular? Because I think, unlike CEOs of other companies that kind of have a PE firm approach to things where it's like cost cutting and early stage, you just need to get a product out. That growth company is sort of, there's a little bit of ego there and you got to like find the balance.
It's a good point. Some of these, the companies who are in that scale, they got the product made for done. They're now in the second stage where they're really growing fast. Most of these companies, for them, this product is their baby and they don't want to give it out to any outside firms and they want to protect, I mean, overall quality code and experience and everything. And I mean, we have some customers, they spoke to some of these large SIs and everything. They feel it. I mean, you know what, we are not, I mean, these guys are not one of us. I mean, they talk to some people, when they talk to us, they feel that, you know what, these guys are like, our teams are part of their team.
Yep.
I mean, from the day one, our engineers sit next to their engineers and they get the, I mean, it's a more of culture mapping. That's what, when we hire engineer, we hire engineers with that mindset. You know what, this is not your typical, I mean, order taker kind of job. It's more of startup. I'm figuring it out. A lot of unknowns, a lot of complexities. How do you navigate these complexities and really make a difference to the customer? Those are the talent we bring from the day one. And when they go and immerse themselves in these companies and they just be part of that company, they never feel that this is an external company or their external entity or external developer. Some of our customers never feel like that.
So we've talked a lot here about sort of from the customer in real, like sort of, I guess, past tense, sort of like you've just gone through this, we've already helped you. What would you say to those founders right now who, it could be MVP, but let's just say that they're like Series A. They're still on their main product. It's still not totally built out. what would you give them as far as advice as to how to approach their tech build and the way that they scale in the future, whether that sends them to eGen or not?
So one, build versus buy. I mean, what are the stuff that you really want to spend money to build it? And what are the, some of the stuff which you can rent it out and buy from cloud providers? I mean, that is the first decision that we help them to make. And a lot of companies, oh, it's a security. We cannot put it on the cloud. We want to build it our own custom. In our thing was nowadays, we have seen enough data points where it doesn't make in many contexts building stuff. It's just a end of the day, you really focus on end customer experience, the product that meant to be making a difference, and get to that product experience part of it versus the underlying the technology components. That is one advice that we are seeing. I mean, in fact, last week, one of our customers said, you know what, it might be your AWS bill and some other cloud bill might be more. It's worth it. I mean, at least you can get to the product much faster to the market versus you want to build every service and every component yourself. It is going to take you this much time.
Yep.
I mean, it's good. I mean, if you want to build everything on your own, it's a trade-off. I mean, what decision you, how fast you want to take it to the product, to the market, and focus more on the experience of the customer and that give it to the product, to the customer, versus spending a lot more time and building stuff.
I have one more question for you that I think is interesting for a lot of listeners who are entrepreneurs, in particular the founder, non-technical. There is a constant theme, and I understand it, from CEOs, and these are founder, CEO, usually non-technical, or if they are technical, they haven't touched a keyboard in a while, that want to make sure that they have entrusted and their CTO or whoever it is a stakeholder so that it's their decision. But the CEO ultimately is the one who the axe falls on. And there's a certain mindset that CEOs need to have that are both culture-driven, product-driven, user-driven, but also bottom-line-driven, especially if they're going to go raise, because they got to be able to have metrics that they can warrant what they're raising and they can reproduce. What is your advice, or what do you say to CEOs when you start this conversation about whether they make a decision to go and work with you and augment, or whether they decide, you know what, we're going to stick this out? What is the conversation like with a CEO who's trying to figure this out?
So we have been into those conversations many times, Scott. And entrepreneurs, I mean, they have built business, sold business, and they came into tech. I mean, now they went on their path where they just want to do it themselves, everything. And then they lost a lot of time, money. And then they came to a point where, okay, what's the next step here? And then obviously, this is where one of the advice that I gave it to entrepreneur was, you cannot create a silo environment. Make sure that some of the companies that we go in, you can really get a quick pulse. I mean, how the teams are passionate about the product and really building a product and making a difference to the customers, or is all about, is a control, territory, power. It's like, that's where some of the stuff, I mean, okay, yeah. If a company or someone has already traveled and built a product and scaled, if he comes on board, I mean, how that is going to make my life easy so that we can take this product to our customer and build, focus more on that, versus, you know what, I'm giving out some of my territory and my budgets to someone else. And we have seen that conversations as well. I mean, some of their internal people that, you know what, if you bring an outside, I mean, then all the product and technology is in the hands of outsiders. Then what is my role as a CTO in the company? And that's where we always try to bring a balance. You know what, you bring a, if there are team members, we want to upskill. If there are some, work with our teams in the next 6 months, we will work with you to try to bring some of your talent to upskill it.
Yep.
So that they can work together. And we are here, I mean, to really focus on making the product success. That is the ultimate goal. I mean, if we product success, is all win for us. Otherwise, everything is south.
You know, I think it's a funny observation based on my experience and then listening to you on this. And I really do. I think this is one of the most fascinating. If you know anyone who writes for Inc., they should write about this. There's a really fascinating conversation about the CEO, and again, I'm going to say non-technical's role in governing a non-siloed approach to things. The concept of insourcing. So for those listening, I'm using insourcing sort of out of in the wrong reference point, but bear with me. Insourcing in this context, you look at large companies, very big companies. Those companies have, they don't use it, but they have the ability, if they want to create sprints on other things that they have no intention of putting out to the public, at least now, and being able to build internal products. They build product for other people, but they don't build it for themselves. Most of the time, there's silo reasons for the big companies. That's why they don't do it. But in the small ones, the reason they don't do it is because they don't have access to a number of people who could be working for them during the day that are not working on something right now. We're using, you stand up a team, and the whole team, maybe it's 10 people, half of them might use 80 to 90 plus percent of their capacity, but three or four probably are using 40% and or so, and you're paying for it. If you're hiring very specific to need only, you have no ability to insource, especially if you don't have a partner externally that can help you, which doesn't make it insourcing, but it does in the case of you. Because if you're putting people on my team, if I'm augmenting your team and as a part of your actual team, a partnership approach, the ability for me as a CEO to test ideas that I get in the middle of the night, or to have our team work on something that normally they wouldn't have time to do, you have this gigantic opportunity to build things in parallel and to test in real time. And I think that's the advantage that the biggest, most powerful companies in the world have and sometimes don't use, that startups don't quite realize that one of the biggest cost benefits of working with you guys is going to be that they can actually test and build new stuff.
You bet.
In real time.
You bet.
You're paying for it anyway.
You bet.
And I think that is, in my mind, you pair that, which I often refer to as the supply chain of tech. If you look at supply chain, which you bring in, plus the gray matter, plus my vision, you can build shit you can't even imagine. And that, to me, is the biggest value of what you guys do, and ultimately probably why you guys have been so successful, because you have partners that recognize that and mm-hmm. leverage you to the hilt.
Right, so I mean, we any given time in Naperville, that's where our development center, we have a dedicated research and strategy team. Their job is continuously look for, if I have customers in retail, I have customers in XYZ space, I mean, financial or insurance. And we continuously, I mean, scan all the signals, I mean, interesting ideas, interesting services. And if there is any idea that we conceive that is really make a difference for our customers, we proactively build it. I mean, we bring the stakeholders every month. Hey, we built this product. I mean, this is an idea for you and just want you to see this is going to really make a difference to you in this way. We proactively go to them. And second thing is, if there are many times when we go into organizations, I mean, the CEOs and the founders, they have all these ideas. How do you really bring that to the life? And that's where we have this R&D team, product team, continuously take those ideas and show them, is this is what you have in mind? And that's exactly right. And second, third thing, another important point was, when we go into any relationship, first question that we ask to our thing was, let's look at the backlogs, look at the epics, I mean, look at the product roadmaps. Without, I mean, let's not even worry putting even one resource on the ground. Let's understand clearly the simplicity, clarity on the product backlog. Then we will start the product development. I mean, many times I pushed back on some of our customers. They said, okay, I need a team. I said, you don't need a team right now. And because we have already three people, we are not, our utilization is not that great.
Yeah.
And we pushed back. I mean, that's where people always say partner versus vendor mindset. I mean, the people who really deliver that, the partnership mindset, those are the companies you stay long with the companies, and that's where you really make a difference.
Oh, totally. I mean, we could have a whole nother show on being able to actually maintain a client for a long period of time. It's not, contrary to popular belief, it's really not very difficult. You're honest and you make sure that you're providing them value every single day, and they'll pay you happily every single day.
You bet. And the other thing I openly and tell our customers, you know what, we are all about outcomes. I mean, you know, there's a lot of in the service space, I mean, it's all type and effort. I mean, no one gets paid for efforts, it's all about results.
Yep.
And let's agree upon, I mean, what some of the outcomes and what some of the results that we are expecting, what are the milestones that we are hitting. So we have to have that clarity, and then everyone should be on the same ground. Okay, by this time we are going with this product. Okay, we have a big show coming up in Louisiana. By this time we have this product ready. So having that contextual understanding, having that outcomes, I always tell some of our customers, okay, pay us by outcomes.
Yeah.
I mean, not by number of teams, number of resources. I mean, just let's agree upon the outcomes.
If you look at the absolute best service provider companies, I'll speak for just Chicago because I know it best, but the best service provider companies in Chicago succeed because they give outsized outcomes. They don't give outsized expectations. And that's the main piece.
You bet.
Where do people go to work with you and to learn more about what you guys are doing?
We go to egeni.com.
Okay. Very cool. Awesome. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Scott.
Of course. To invest in startups, download past episodes, or apply to the pitch on the Startup Showcase, check out technori.com. Stay connected by following us on social at technori, or you can follow me at Katoon. Boom, that's a wrap.